listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Dr. Dunham, hopefully you'll be our guest when we have reality radio and all the things behind the scenes and front of the scenes. Dr. Rochelle had done a mental health awareness month. First of all, welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Thank you what you do in terms of trying to make us aware of all the realities of mental health. But if nothing else, like so many other things, we got a week, we got a month.
Yeah.
Just talk about Mental Health Awareness Month and why it's important and why this continued fight for us to be more understanding of what's happening with mental health and trauma.
Yeah, thank you and good morning. Absolutely, Mental Health Awareness Month is critical to us actually focusing and honing in on the fact that our mental health is extremely critical. In fact, it's in some ways more critical because it helps you with your physical health, right? But some statistics, 1 in 5 people in the United States have mental illness. And mental illness is anxiety, depression, mood stuff that is beyond just let's have a conversation.
Right.
You really need a professional intervention to pull it together.
It needs some real help.
It needs real help. That's right. And then in truth, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about suicides because suicide is hugely problematic. It's a quiet killer. And many times people try, so we call them attempts, but they were often trying to get, they may have been trying to get help, but there are other times where they were trying to get help and they succeeded in actually killing themselves.
Right.
So just statistically, it's the 10th leading cause of death in the United States.
This thing with suicides on the rise and so many younger people now that we're seeing.
Second leading cause of death in younger people.
And let's talk about this thing Dr. Turner always talks about, and Jeff Thomas and yourself, cultural competency, you know, and understanding. There was a time, Dr. Dunham, I'm old enough to know that in our community, we didn't have the numbers we have right now.
Yes.
There was the family structure was different in terms of we had a unit that you kind of worked through it. So what is it now that we're seeing in many cases levels of extreme behavior mentally and socially in the African-American community that was not part of our culture or our history?
Well, you know, despair and hopelessness
catches up
is at the core of why people kill themselves. They really don't see any other way out.
Right.
Except to just escape life.
But why was suicide so much more prevalent, especially in the white community, than it was, and even in other communities, certain other cultures, if you weren't successful?
Well, historically, I think our spiritual roots have been really, really a connector to hope for us. Because at the core of spirituality is hope.
Keep hope alive.
Yeah, keep it alive, but a little bit more biblically focused.
Right.
But we have seen an erosion in people who even practice a faith. And so that is is probably a major contributor balanced against different kinds of pressures that people are dealing with.
So not to be a little facetious, but when T.G. Jakes talks about losing members, right, a church in decline, when we see mega churches actually shrinking.
Yes.
So people not even thinking Jesus can save them.
Yeah, well, you got to grow up in an understanding, a knowledge, a fundamental grounding in the principles of spirituality in order for it to become a part of shaping who you are.
More than just religion.
More than just religion. Okay. Talking about spirituality here,
because
that's really connecting at the soul level to what a higher power really is intended to do for us. But if you aren't indoctrinated that way, it's harder. It's not impossible, but it's harder to get that basis to your life.
Doc, I want to stay there with you a minute. When you mentioned suicide, it's all part of Mental Health Awareness Month. And always again, thank you for what you do. There's been this notion for quite some time, especially in the last maybe 40 years, about, suicide through violence, right? Mm-hmm. How young people will engage in shootouts and mm-hmm. violent behavior. In many cases, we've had kids say who got shot or who were there, they didn't care about living. And, you know, that was it. They were going to go out in the blaze.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard the term. I've never heard anybody clinically talk about why it fits. Is that appropriate? Is that something else?
Well, if you think, I mean, it's still the issue of hope.
Okay.
Fundamentally, people don't have hope.
Right.
And hope really does inspire you
hope
to look beyond.
Hope springs eternal, right?
Yeah. Well, it inspires you to look beyond your immediate situation mm-hmm. and to know that.
You can get out of it.
You can get out of it and that this will pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of that type of thinking is taught and learned and practiced, and you see where it works, and you do it, and you do it over and over, and you see where it works.
So then let me ask you this question.
Yes.
And guys, this is an important conversation. Were the churches better at connecting? Was Jesus more powerful than the circumstances?
But what is the church, though, really? What is the church?
Church is us.
The church is a people.
I've always said that the people will blame the pastor, where there are more y'all than there are the pastor.
You can't blame the pastor.
Right.
You got to
right.
blame the, it's the people.
It's the people.
People make the, when Katrina hit, the churches were gone, but the church wasn't gone because the people were
Society
here.
Society is ultimately a reflection of us,
exactly.
including our leaders.
Exactly. The edifice just houses the church.
Great point.
But the church is the people.
Right.
And so if the people aren't internally connected in a way that they need to be connected, then the people suffer. And so the church naturally suffers.
So when the church is just peddling religion and culture and economics, that's one thing. But building that spiritual foundation that fuels and funnels and fosters hope,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that's the most important thing.
Yeah. You know, it's really about your connection to your source of life, mm-hmm. which for many of us is God.
Right.
Everybody doesn't get that. Everybody doesn't live on those
right.
principles. But for those who connect with a higher source, whether independent of your religion
mm-hmm.
And how you practice your faith, but that you are it's grounded in a fundamental belief that there is something hugely bigger than I am.
Then let me ask you this question. You know, there's so much what we do in terms of series of shows, and what I try to do is help people figure their stuff out, right? This place, this is Mental Health Awareness Month. You do it every day, 365, 24/7
yes.
throughout this region. New Orleans mentally and emotionally has been very fragile for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote a piece, The State of Mental Health and Trauma, and for Think504.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of chronicled not just the now, but why we're even sober and sane anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so what were the triggers, right? Because life has always been difficult, especially if you're poor, especially if you're black,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're black male and a single black female. It's always been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But why am I wanting to give up my life now?
Well, you know, every generation has had its struggles.
Okay.
This generation is no different from any other generation. I mean, mm-hmm. Because it's truly fair.
And we choose different methods.
You know, I mean, slavery wasn't a nice time for people of color, for us to be living. Mm-hmm.
And
was rough.
And there were some people who opted to kill themselves.
They did. Absolutely, they did.
They jumped off the boat. They
Absolutely,
hung themselves.
They did. Right. And all of the civil rights work that was done, that was
right.
very difficult stuff
right.
going on then.
Right.
So we have our share
mm-hmm.
of the struggles to
mm-hmm.
deal with. But what's different about people then, maybe,
yes.
than
yes.
the people now?
That's my
now?
Question.
And I think fundamentally a groundedness is different now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got so many more idols to focus our attention on.
The competition? Materialism?
And information alone is a distractant
mm-hmm.
because I think in many cases people confuse intellect with faith.
I had Caroline Hunter, one of the great educators, Polaroid Kodak Apartheid from New Orleans. Dr. Hunter's sister lives up there in Martha's Vineyard and in Massachusetts. She started the whole public education charter system focusing on at-risk kids in Boston. And her and I went to dinner a couple of years ago, and she says, yes, there's access, more access to information.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but there's less processing.
Well, you can only process so much
of that information because there's so much.
Yeah, that's too much.
Training your mind.
Overload. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And then when you've got so much information, it's difficult to focus on what's critical for you to know and understand. And if it's all coming at you, it all presents as having the same importance or relevance.
504-260-9265, another fascinating, important discussion with Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham, the CEO, President of Metropolitan Human Health Services, Mental Health Awareness Month. We've seen consistently, we've done a couple shows here on social media mm-hmm. and cell phone addiction mm-hmm. right now. I think the one with Anderson Cooper on CNN was very telling when the 13-year-old girl, mm-hmm. when they took her phone, wanted to kill herself.
Yeah.
We see adults and we see especially millennials in many cases. They'll be on their phone until they fall asleep mm-hmm. with their phone. And we're learning is the psychological attrition mm-hmm. that comes from being so dependent on a device. How much of a contributor is that to mental and emotional instability? Now?
Well, here we go, because dependence on anything is problematic. Whether it's a device, whether it's a substance, it's the same
outcome.
Whether
it's an opioid.
Whether it's an opioid even. Dependence is problematic. And you should not, anything that you spend more time than not doing can be problematic. And so if that's spending a lot of time on a device, having conversations that are not personally edifying, settling, clarifying for you, that's problematic.
Well, we got a caller all the way from California. The Good Morning Show, man. We've been so blessed here with people who are tuning in all across the region. All across this country. Line one, David, you're on with Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham, man. God bless you.
Yeah, morning. Peace be with us.
Peace be with
you.
Hey,
you know, I was listening to this with interest because you know how when life gives you lemons, you can turn it into lemonade?
Yes, correct.
I was thinking of this opportunity that just showed up 2 days ago mm-hmm. that's a terror on the farmers, especially the ones that are growing soybeans. Trump did a brand new embargo against China.
Yes.
And he has crashed the price of soybeans to the dirt. And so now soybean farmers, their suicide rate was already high 6 months ago.
Yes, it was.
And so this is going to do them in. Well, who's here to save the day but the famous George Washington Carver that said that you can invent 600 things out of a soybean, and it's not just, you know, soy butter or something like that. There were plastics. There was high-quality plastics. There were cheap plastics. There were biodegradable plastics.
Great point.
That fall apart in the sun. Mm-hmm. There were some that would fall apart in water. So within probably 2 weeks, people could actually buy huge bushels of soybeans, turn them into those grocery store bags that would biodegrade in a week.
That's right.
And you could create an income for the farmers that are blowing their brains out.
But
St. George Washington Carver mm-hmm. would get his due respect.
Yeah, but Dave, let me ask you this question. You, Dr. Dunham, can both chime in. During the Great Depression, right, Constitutional Conventions and Reconstruction, there were some very trying times on people emotionally. Mm-hmm. David, what was different then where people said, you know what, this is a trying and depressing time, but I'm going to find another way, where in many cases people today are finding it more difficult with access to more resources. Dave, what's different about today?
Well, there are different – I mean, just the ability to travel. Right? Wasn't there a Supreme Court ruling that said that you couldn't leave your county except by permission of the police chief or something like that? There were some.
But what makes it more difficult for people to overcome these harsh times or these instances, whereas people who experienced it then, they still found a way? That's the question I'm asking.
I couldn't tell you the whole big picture.
Okay.
Now, I am a historian, and I do study stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got your Dust Bowl days over in Oklahoma, you know, mm-hmm. where you had everybody just basically agriculture, and this gets back to George Washington Carver.
Mm-hmm.
Carver noticed that the cotton monopolies, you know, those guys had hogged all the land. They just overproduced. They ruined the soil. And so Carver was intentionally trying to repair the soil. And in doing so, he was planting a crop that would repair the soil, and you could make 600 inventions. And so then he had 400 things that came from the peanut. So you got 1,000 inventions, plastics, paper, ink, all kinds of stuff from soybeans. And he then didn't put them in patent. He put them in public domain so people could automatically just go down to their garage and start creating ink or something.
Hey, Dave, thank you. Thank you, man. So, sure. And thank you for being the first-time caller. I look forward to you contributing again.
Well, I was going to add that Oklahoma, you know, their Dust Bowl days were tied to the same problem.
Right.
And the big, big farmers had ruined the soil, and then Chicago Board of Trade had intentionally jacked the prices of commodities up and down, up and down, up and down, ruining farmers and making them insane. So that's, you know, this is just one of those opportunities where, in a way, the meek can inherit the earth. If you just look at George Washington Carver's intention, he invented those things in order to repair the soil.
We got you, man. The lines are lit up. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Peace be with us.
Can continue to contribute. We appreciate it, man. First time caller, all over from California.
Here's why I think his point about Carver and the farmers in particular is relevant. So there are many hopeful things that are happening right now. Mm-hmm. First of all, not focusing as much on what is not working and more on what is working frees you to think creatively.
Okay.
And so we have to really use our ability to think beyond the problem to thinking to solutions.
Thinking beyond that problem.
Yes, that's right. Because you can get caught up in the problem and it really paralyzes your ability to think and be creative. And so I think that we have more of a veil of negativity that we're living in now. And more of an umbrella of things being so despairing. We see it, but there's intentional focus on seeing it. Because there are a lot of good things going on. There are a lot of positive things. But you don't see it. Mm-hmm. You don't hear it. It's not sensationalized. It doesn't make the news. And so people think that everything is just so hopeless and so despairing. And in truth, that is a way of thinking about things. So I think that part of the problem is that our culture now really does center itself a lot on what's wrong and not enough on what's right.
So you keep perking my little brain. And I talk about so many of these things, whether I'm lecturing to folk, whether it's on the show. One of these things I see now is that I remember when it was okay just to be a good person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay. You didn't have to be well known.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to have a major skill, a craft, a talent.
Mm-hmm.
You could just be a good person.
Yes.
That was valued. That doesn't seem
society
to be good enough anymore.
Society determines what is valuable and what's not.
Right.
That's what we do. And so you got to blame our way of deciding what has purpose, what has meaning, what has value to a lot of reason why we're in the situation that we're in.
Right.
It's not necessarily that things are so much worse if you think about those other struggles of other cultures. I mean, technology in and of itself is not the problem. It's the people and how it gets used and how it gets prioritized and the value that is assigned to it that becomes problematic.
Derek Labatt on social media earlier reminded us that I'm working with Dr. Cindy DeSang from Tulane on her machine learning concept and what it's done with violence. But Derek Labatt earlier on Facebook reminded us that we're getting to robotics. Mm-hmm. We're getting to a point where at some point people are going to have to know how to be involved in that programming, that
artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Yes. At some point you're going to have to know that. But, you know, I went to school while I was doing cement work,
mm-hmm.
putting roofs on houses.
Mm-hmm. That was valuable.
Sheetrocking my house. I learned it so well that when I bought a property, I actually saved and did some of the work myself.
Right.
So why can I do that now, then? But we have this $1 billion shortage in skilled labor and economy.
Because it hasn't been valued, Oliver. When you were coming up, developing skills and being able to take care of your own circumstances without having to call somebody, just your value as a man, value as a person.
I could think and paint a wall.
That's right. And that was lauded. That had high worth.
Right.
That's not the world we're living in now. I mean, and we are missing a whole set of capability and skills because that's not value.
Then I'm going to ask you something, a real heavy piece, because you really got my mind working. My mother, with all the stresses and pressures, and my father, growing up in the lower nine, the community, I remember for years my father didn't work. You know, he did what he had to do, you know. But they had a relationship with the land, right? My mom grew three kinds of peppers, right? My dad would engage with us in the yard, especially Saturday morning. It was chores. There was a routine there. There was something about getting tired with the land, pulling up the weeds. When we talk about weed eater, me and my brother were the weed eaters.
Yeah.
And we were the edges.
Yeah.
But there was a relationship with the land.
Yeah. Survival.
But that relationship with the land, as I think back on it now, as tough as it was living and surviving and economically, that relationship with the land gave us some peace, even with our reluctance.
Yes. It does so many things. It certainly makes you comfortable about your longevity here.
Right.
But it also is therapeutic because it relaxes you and gives you peace. Mm-hmm. One of my daughters is moving away to another country, and she says one of the things she wants to do is to work on a farm. So I said, why do you want to do that? She said, because it's one of the most sustainable things in life to be able to do is to farm.
Mental Health Awareness Month, Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham. You can check out my piece on think504.com on mental health and trauma. I've been thinking about this a lot, Doc. What are some of the things we can do in terms of Mental Health Awareness Month to kind of help ourselves, help our loved ones, and so that we can be more sober and sane?
I think we've got to get a lot more basic about this.
Okay.
It's gotten so complicated. There are things that our minds and our bodies tell us all the time,
right.
Do this, but we never listen to it.
Right.
Resting is a big deal.
Right.
Having less conversation, listening more.
Spending
time meditating, doing the things that you always got joy from that you have lost in your life.
Yoga and some gardening.
Maybe that. Whatever it is, we need to get back to it. Right. I do want to mention that Metropolitan will be hosting public forums at the end of this month. One in St. Bernard, one in Plaquemines, one in Orleans Parish. Right. And the purpose of that is for us to be given a report card on the way we are providing services. So we're going to talk about what we are doing, have done, will do, and we want you to tell us whether or not we're doing a good job or thinking right and actually literally grade us.
Well, I've already graded you guys with an A, and as I've told you the last two times you've been on the show, the conversation about mental health and mental health awareness is reached a pinnacle and an apex or a point, not only in this country but especially here in New Orleans. And so now the concern is, do the resources begin to match the awareness? So I think you've done that. So you get an A from WBOK, from Oliver Thomas, and the Early Bird, Dr.
Well, we
Dunham.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. Promise to come back?
Absolutely.
Just one quick tip, if you feel like you have some mental pressure, Dr. Dunham would tell someone to do what?
Call 568-3130, Metropolitan Human Services District. We're ready. All of the lines are always open. Even if you're having a traumatic situation, we got somebody who may even come to your house to help you.
You could even help Lee Hardy in the Early Bird?
Yes.
You could even help Lee
always.
In the Early Bird. Always. Guys, when we come back talking about help, Peace on the River, Joe Givens, Executive Director of the Isaiah Group, this event, this Saturday, May the 11th, Peace on the River. You know, when we started, the last couple of years I've started the ESI saying, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. That's that song that we sing in our churches.
Yeah,
and
churches.
I know it's guaranteed that if I'm more peaceful, everything in and around my world is
more peaceful.
If you're most peaceful, everything in and around in yours is more peaceful. God bless you, Dr. Rochelle Dunham. You promise to come back?
I will promise.
But when we come back, I think I can actually have a conversation with him about peace and what worked. He was here when New Orleans had the greatest reduction in violent crime of any major city in America. Joe Givens, Executive Director of the Isaiah Institute, when we come back.